Clary. I know who it is. He sounded irritated. I was asleep, you know. I know, it's early. I'm sorry. She twirled the phone cord around her finger. I need to ask you for a favor. There was another silence before he laughed bleakly. You're kidding. I'm not kidding, she said. We know where the mortal cup is, and we're prepared to go get it. The only thing is, we need a car. He laughed again. Sorry, are you telling me that your demon-slaying buddies need to be driven to their next assignation with the forces of darkness by my mom? Actually, I thought you could ask Eric if you could borrow the van. Clary, if you think that if we get the mortal cup, I'll have a way to get my mom back. It's the only reason Valentine hasn't killed her or let her go. Simon let out a long, whistling breath. You think it's going to be that easy to make a trade? Clary, I don't know. I don't know either. I just know it's a chance. This thing is powerful, right? In D&D, it's usually better not to mess with powerful objects until you know what they do. I'm not going to mess with it. I'm just going to use it to get my mom back. That doesn't make any sense, Clary. This isn't D&D, Simon, she half screamed. It's not a funny game where the worst thing that happens is you get a bad dice roll. This is my mom we're talking about, and Valentine could be torturing her. He could kill her. I have to do anything I can to get her back, just like I did for you. Pause. Maybe you're right. I don't know, this isn't really my world. Look, where are we driving to exactly, so I can tell Eric? Don't bring him, she said quickly. I know, he replied with exaggerated patience. I'm not stupid. We're driving to my house. It's in my house. There was a short silence, bewilderment this time. In your house? I thought your house was full of zombies. Forsaken warriors. They're not zombies. Anyway, Jace and the others can take care of them while I get the cup. Why do you have to get the cup? He sounded alarmed. Because I'm the only one that can, she said. Pick us up at the corner as soon as you can. He muttered something nearly inaudible, then, fine. She opened her eyes. The world swam before her in a blur of tears. Thanks, Simon, she said. You're a... But he had hung up.
It occurs to me, said Hodge, that the dilemmas of power are always the same.
Clary glanced at him sideways. What do you mean? She sat on the window seat in the library, Hodge in his chair with Hugo on the armrest. The remains of breakfast, sticky jam, toast crumbs, and smears of butter, clung to a stack of plates on the low table that no one had seemed inclined to clear away. After breakfast, they had scattered to prepare themselves, and Clary had been the first one back. This was hardly surprising, considering that all she had to do was pull on jeans and a shirt and run a brush through her hair, while everyone else had to arm themselves heavily. Having lost Jace's dagger in the hotel, the only remotely supernatural object she had on her was the witchlight stone in her pocket.
I was thinking of your Simon, Hodge said, and of Alec and Jace, among others.
She glanced out the window. It was raining, thick, fat drops spattering across the panes. The sky was an impenetrable gray. What do they have to do with each other?
Where there is feeling that is not requited, said Hodge, there is an imbalance of power. It is an imbalance that is easy to exploit, but it is not a wise course. Where there is love, there is often also hate. They can exist side by side.
Simon doesn't hate me.
He might grow to, over time, if he felt you were using him.
Hodge held up a hand.
I know you do not intend to, and in some cases, necessity trumps nicety of feeling. But the situation has put me in mind of another. Do you still have that photograph I gave you?
Clary shook her head. Not on me. It's back in my room. I could go get it.
No.
Hodge stroked Hugo's ebony feathers.
When your mother was young, she had a best friend, just as you have Simon. They were as close as siblings. In fact, they were often mistaken for brother and sister. As they grew older, it became clear to everyone around them that he was in love with her, but she never saw it. She always called him a friend.
Clary stared at Hodge. Do you mean Luke?
Yes, said Hodge. Lucian always thought he and Jocelyn would be together. When she met and loved Valentine, he could not bear it. After they were married, he left the circle, disappeared, and let us all think that he was dead.
He never said, never even hinted at anything like that, Clary said. All these years, he could have asked her.
He knew what the answer would be, said Hodge, looking past her toward the rain-spattered skylight. Lucian was never the sort of man who would have deluded himself. No, he contented himself with being near her, assuming, perhaps, that over time her feelings might change.
But if he loved her, why did he tell those men he didn't care what happened to her? Why did he refuse to let them tell him where she was?
As I said before, where there is love, there is also hatred, said Hodge. She hurt him badly all those years ago. She turned her back on him. And yet he has played her faithful lapdog ever since, never remonstrating, never accusing, never confronting her with his feelings. Perhaps he saw an opportunity to turn the tables, to hurt her as he'd been hurt.
Luke wouldn't do that.
But Clary was remembering his icy tone as he told her not to ask him for favors. She saw the hard look in his eyes as he faced Valentine's men. That wasn't the Luke she'd known, the Luke she'd grown up with. That Luke would have never wanted to punish her mother for not loving him enough or in the right way. But she did love him, Clary said, speaking aloud without realizing it. It just wasn't the same way he loved her. Isn't that enough?
Perhaps he didn't think so.
What will happen after we get the cup? She said. How will we reach Valentine to let him know we have it?
Hugo will find him.
The rain smashed against the windows. Clary shivered. I'm going to get a jacket, she said, slipping off the window seat. She found her green and pink hoodie stuffed down at the bottom of her backpack. When she pulled it out, she heard something crinkle. It was the photograph of the circle, her mother and Valentine. She looked at it for a long moment before slipping it back into the bag. When she returned to the library, the others were all gathered there, Hodge sitting watchfully with Hugo on his shoulder, Jace all in black, Isabel with her demon stomping boots and gold whip, and Alec with a quiver of arrows strapped across his shoulder and a leather bracer sheathing his right arm from wrist to elbow. Everyone but Hodge was covered in freshly applied marks, every inch of bare skin inked with swirling patterns. Jace had his left sleeve pulled up, chin on his shoulder, and was frowning as he scrawled an octagonal mark on the skin of his upper arm. Alec looked over at him. "You're messing it up," he said. "Let me do that."
"I'm left-handed," Jace pointed out, but he spoke mildly and held his steely out.
Alec looked relieved as he took it, as if he hadn't been sure until now that he was forgiven for his earlier behavior.
"It's a basic erotzi," Jace said, as Alec bent his dark head over Jace's arm, carefully tracing the lines of the healing rune.
Jace winced as the steely slid over his skin, his eyes half-closing and his fist tightening until the muscles of his left arm stood out like cords.
"By the angel, Alec."
"I'm trying to be careful," said Alec. He let go of Jace's arm and stepped back to admire his handiwork.
"There."
Jace unclenched his fist, lowering his arm.
"Thanks."
He seemed to sense Clary's presence then, glancing over at her, his gold eyes narrowing.
"Clary?"
"You look ready," she said as Alec, suddenly flushed, moved away from Jace and busied himself with his arrows.
"We are," Jace said. "Do you still have that dagger I gave you?"
"No, I lost it in the Demort, remember?"
"That's right."
Jace looked at her, pleased.
"Nearly killed a werewolf with it, I remember."
Isabel, who had been standing by the window, rolled her eyes.
"I forgot that's what gets you all hot and bothered, Jace. Girls killing things."
"I like anyone killing things," he said equably. "Especially me."
Clary glanced anxiously toward the clock on the desk. "We should go downstairs. Simon will be here any minute." Hodge stood up from his chair. He looked very tired, Clary thought, as if he hadn't slept in days.
"May the angel watch over you all," he said,
and Hugo rose up from his shoulder into the air, calling loudly, just as the noon bells began to ring. It was still drizzling when Simon pulled the van up at the corner and honked twice. Clary's heart leaped. Some part of her had been worried that he wasn't going to show up. Jace squinted through the dripping rain. The four of them had taken shelter under a carved stone cornice.
That's the van. It looks like a rotting banana.
This was undeniable. Eric had painted the van a neon shade of yellow, and it was blotched with dings and rust like splotches of decay. Simon honked again. Clary could see him, a blurred shape through the wet windows. She sighed and pulled her hood up to cover her hair.
Let's go.
They splashed through the filthy puddles that had collected on the pavement, Isabel's enormous boots making a satisfying noise every time she put her feet down. Simon, leaving the motor idling, crawled into the back to pull the door aside, revealing seats whose upholstery had half rotted through. Dangerous-looking springs poked through the gaps. Isabel wrinkled her nose.
Is it safe to sit?
Safer than being strapped to the roof, said Simon pleasantly, which is your other option.
He nodded a greeting to Jason Alec, ignoring Clary completely.
Hey.
Hey, indeed, said Jace, and lifted the rattling canvas duffel bag that held their weapons. Where can we put these?
Simon directed him to the back, where the boys usually kept their musical instruments, while Alec and Isabel crawled into the van's interior and perched on the seats.
Shotgun, announced Clary as Jace came back around the side of the van.
Alec grabbed for his bow, strapped across his back.
Where?
She means she wants the front seat, said Jace, pushing wet hair out of his eyes.
That's a nice bow, said Simon, with a nod toward Alec.
Alec blinked, rain running off his eyelashes.
Do you know much about archery?
He asked, in a tone that suggested that he doubted it.
I did archery at camp, said Simon. 6 years running.
The response to this was three blank stares and a supportive smile from Clary, which Simon ignored. He glanced up at the lowering sky.
We should go before it starts pouring again.
The front seat of the car was covered in Doritos wrappers and Pop-Tart crumbs. Clary brushed away what she could. Simon put his foot down on the gas pedal before she'd finished, flinging her back against the seat.
Ouch, she said reprovingly.
Sorry.
He didn't look at her. Clary could hear the others talking softly in the back amongst themselves, probably discussing battle strategies and the best way to behead a demon without getting ichor on your new leather boots. Though there was nothing separating the front seat from the rest of the van, Clary felt the awkward silence between her and Simon as if they were alone.
So what's with that hay thing?
She asked, as Simon maneuvered the car onto the FDR Parkway, the highway that ran alongside the East River.
What hay thing?
He replied, cutting off a black SUV whose occupant, a suited man with a cell phone in his hand, made an obscene gesture at them through the tinted windows.
The hay thing that guys always do. Like when you saw Jason Alec, you said, hey, and they said, hey, back. What's wrong with hello?
She thought she saw a muscle twitch in his cheek.
Hello is girly, he informed her. Real men are terse, laconic.
So the more manly you are, the less you say?
Right, Simon nodded.
Past him, she could see the humid fog lowering over the East River, shrouding the waterfront in feathery gray mist. The water itself was the color of lead, churned to a whipped cream consistency by the steady wind.
That's why when major badasses greet each other in movies, they don't say anything. They just nod. The nod means, I am a badass, and I recognize that you too are a badass. But they don't say anything because they're Wolverine and Magneto, and it would mess up their vibe to explain.
I have no idea what you're talking about, said Jace from the back seat.
Good, Clary said, and was rewarded by the smallest of smiles from Simon as he turned the van onto the Manhattan Bridge, heading toward Brooklyn and home. By the time they reached Clary's house, it had finally stopped raining. Threaded beams of sunlight were burning away the remnants of mist, and the puddles on the sidewalk were drying. Jace, Alec, and Isabel made Simon and Clary wait by the van while they went to check, as Jace said, the demonic activity levels. Simon watched as the three shadow hunters headed up the rose-lined walkway to the house.
Demonic activity levels? Do they have a device that measures whether the demons inside the house are doing power yoga?
No, Clary said, pushing her damp hood back so she could enjoy the feel of the sunlight on her draggled hair. The sensor tells them how powerful the demons are, if there are any demons. Simon looked impressed.
That is useful.
She turned to him. Simon, about last night. He held up a hand.
We don't have to talk about it. In fact, I'd rather not.
Just let me say one thing, she spoke quickly. I know that when you said you loved me,
What I said back wasn't what you wanted to hear.
True. I'd always hoped that when I finally said I love you to a girl, she'd say,
I know,
back, like Leia did to Han in Return of the Jedi.
That is so geeky, Clary said, unable to help herself.
He glared at her.
Sorry, she said. Look, Simon, I...
No, he said. You look, Clary. Look at me, and really see me. Can you do that?
She looked at him. Looked at the dark eyes, flecked with lighter color toward the outside edge of the iris. At the familiar, slightly uneven eyebrows, the long lashes, the dark hair and hesitating smile and graceful musical hands that were all part of Simon, who was part of her. If she had to tell the truth, would she really say that she'd never known that he loved her? Or just that she'd never known what she would do about it if he did? She sighed. Seeing through glamour is easy. It's people that are hard.
We all see what we want to see, he said quietly.
Not Jace, she said, unable to help herself, thinking of those clear, impassive eyes.
Him more than anyone.
She frowned. What do you...
All right, came Jace's voice, interrupting them.
Clary turned hastily.
We've checked all four corners of the house. Nothing. Low activity. Probably just the Forsaken, and they might not even bother us unless we try getting into the upstairs apartment.
And if they do, said Isabel, her grin as glittering as her whip, we'll be ready for them. Alec dragged the heavy canvas bag out of the back of the van, dropping it on the sidewalk.
Ready to go, he announced. Let's kick some demon butt.
Jace looked at him a little oddly.
You all right?
Fine. Not looking at him, Alec discarded his bow and arrow in favor of a polished wooden feather staff with two glittering blades that appeared at a light touch from his fingers. This is better. Isabel looked at her brother with concern. But the bow... Alec cut her off. I know what I'm doing, Isabel. The bow lay across the back seat, gleaming in the sunlight. Simon reached for it, then drew his hand back as a laughing group of young women pushing strollers headed up the street in the direction of the park. They took no notice of the three heavily armed teenagers crouched by the yellow van.
How come I can see you guys? Simon asked. What happened to that invisibility magic of yours?
You can see us, said Jace, because now you know the truth of what you're looking at.
Yeah, said Simon. I guess I do.
He protested a little when they asked him to stay by the van, but Jace impressed upon him the importance of having a getaway vehicle idling by the curb.
Well, sunlight's fatal to demons, but it won't hurt the Forsaken. What if they chase us? What if the car gets towed?
The last Clary saw of Simon as she turned to wave from the front porch was his long legs propped up on the dashboard as he sorted through Eric's CD collection. She breathed a sigh of relief. At least Simon was safe. The smell hit her the moment they walked through the front door. It was almost indescribable, like spoiled eggs and maggoty meat and seaweed rotting on a hot beach. Isabel wrinkled her nose and Alec turned greenish, but Jace looked as if he were inhaling rare perfume.
Demons have been here, he announced with cold delight, recently too.
Clary looked at him anxiously. But they're not still...
No, he shook his head. We would have sensed it. Still.
He jerked his chin at Dorothea's door, tightly shut without a wisp of light peeking from underneath.
She might have some questions to answer if the Clave hears she's been entertaining demons.
I doubt the Clave will be too pleased about any of this, said Isabel. On balance, she'll probably come out of it better than we do.
They won't care as long as we get the cup in the end.
Alec was glancing around, blue eyes taking in the sizable foyer, the curved staircase leading upstairs, the stains on the walls.
Especially if we slaughter a few Forsaken while we do it.
Jace shook his head.
They're in the upstairs apartment. My guess is that they won't bother us unless we try to get in.
Isabel blew a sticky strand of hair out of her face and frowned at Clary.
What are you waiting for?
Clary glanced involuntarily at Jace, who gave her a sideways smile.
Go ahead, said his eyes.
She moved across the foyer toward Dorothea's door, stepping carefully. With the skylight blackened with dirt and the entryway light bulb still out, the only illumination came from Jace's witchlight. The air was hot and close, and the shadows seemed to rise up before her like magically fast-growing plants in a nightmare forest. She reached up to knock on Dorothea's door, once lightly, and then again with more force. It swung open, spilling a great wash of golden light into the foyer. Dorothea stood there, massive and imposing in swaths of green and orange. Today, her turban was neon yellow, adorned with a stuffed canary and rickrack trim. Chandelier earrings bobbed against her hair, and her big feet were bare. Clary was surprised. She'd never seen Dorothea barefoot before, or wearing anything other than her faded carpet slippers. Her toenails were a pale and very tasteful shell pink. "Clary!" she exclaimed, and swept Clary into an overwhelming embrace. For a moment, Clary struggled, embroiled in a sea of perfumed flesh, swaths of velvet, and the tasseled ends of Dorothea's shawl.
"Good Lord, girl,"
said the witch, shaking her head until her earrings swung like wind chimes in a storm.
"The last time I saw you, you were disappearing through my portal. Where'd you end up?"
"Williamsburg," said Clary, catching her breath. Dorothea's eyebrows shot skyward.
"And they say there's no convenient public transportation in Brooklyn."
She swung the door open and gestured for them to come in. The place looked unchanged from the last time Clary had seen it. There were the same tarot cards and crystal ball scattered on the table. Her fingers itched for the cards, itched to snatch them up and see what might lie hidden inside their slickly painted surfaces. Dorothea sank gratefully into an armchair and regarded the shadow hunters with a stare as beady as the eyes of the stuffed canary on her hat. Scented candles burned in dishes on either side of the table, which did little to dispel the thick stench pervading every inch of the house.
"I take it you haven't located your mother?" she asked Clary.
Clary shook her head.
"No, but I know who took her."
Dorothea's eyes darted past Clary to Alec and Isabel, who were examining the Hand of Fate on the wall. Jace, looking supremely unconcerned in his role of bodyguard, lounged against a chair arm. Satisfied that none of her belongings were being destroyed, Dorothea returned her gaze to Clary.
"Was it
Valentine?" Clary confirmed.
"Yes."
Dorothea sighed.
"I feared as much."
She settled back against the cushions.
"Do you know what he wants with her?"
"I know she was married to him." The witch grunted.
"Love gone wrong. The worst."
Jace made a soft, almost inaudible noise at that. A chuckle. Dorothea's ears pricked like a cat's.
"What's so funny, boy?"
"What would you know about it?" he said. "Love, I mean."
Dorothea folded her soft white hands in her lap.
"More than you might think," she said. "Didn't I read your tea leaves, Shadow Hunter? Have you fallen in love with the wrong person yet?"
Jace said,
"Unfortunately, my one true love remains myself."
Dorothea roared at that.
"At least," she said, "you don't have to worry about rejection, Jace Wayland."
"Not necessarily. I turn myself down occasionally, just to keep it interesting."
Dorothea roared again. Clary interrupted her.
"You must be wondering why we're here, Madam Dorothea."
Dorothea subsided, wiping at her eyes.
"I assumed," she said, "that you came for the pleasure of my company. Was I wrong?"
"I don't have time for the pleasure of anyone's company. I have to help my mother, and to do that, there's something I need."
"And what's that?"
"It's something called the Mortal Cup," Clary said, "and Valentine thought my mother had it. That's why he took her."
Dorothea looked well and truly astonished.
"The Cup of the Angel?"
she said, disbelief coloring her voice.
"Raziel's cup, in which he mixed the blood of angels and the blood of men, and gave of this mixture to a man to drink, and created the first Shadow Hunter?"
"That would be the one,"
said Jace, a little dryness in his tone.
"Why on earth would he think she had it?"
Dorothea demanded.
"Jocelyn, of all people."
Realization dawned on her face before Clary could speak.
"Because she wasn't Jocelyn Frey at all, of course," she said. "She was Jocelyn Fairchild, his wife, the one everyone thought had died. She took the cup and fled, didn't she?"
Something flickered in the back of the witch's eyes then, but she lowered her lid so quickly that Clary thought she might have imagined it.
"So," Dorothea said, "do you know what you're going to do now? Wherever she's hidden it, it can't be easy to find, if you even want it found. Valentine could do terrible things with his hands on that cup."
"I want it found," said Clary.
"We want to..." Jace cut her off smoothly.
We know where it is, he said. It's only a matter of retrieving it.
Dorothea's eyes widened.
Well, where is it?
Here, said Jace, in a tone so smug that Isabel and Alec wandered over from their perusal of the bookcase to see what was going on.
Here? You mean you have it with you?
Not exactly, said Jace, who was, Clary felt, enjoying himself in a truly appalling manner. I meant that you have it. Dorothea's mouth snapped shut.
That's not funny, she said,
so sharply that Clary became worried that this was all going terribly wrong. Why did Jace always have to antagonize everyone?
You do have it, Clary interrupted hurriedly, but not...
Dorothea rose from the armchair to her full magnificent height and glowered down at them.
You are mistaken, she said coldly, both in imagining that I have the cup and in daring to come here and call me a liar.
Alec's hand went to his feather staff.
Oh boy, he said under his breath.
Baffled, Clary shook her head.
No, she said quickly, I'm not calling you a liar. I promise, I'm saying the cup is here, but you never knew it.
Madame Dorothea stared at her. Her eyes, nearly hidden in the folds of her face, were hard as marbles.
Explain yourself, she said.
I'm saying my mother hid it here, said Clary, years ago. She never told you because she didn't want to involve you.
So she gave it to you disguised, Jace explained, in the form of a gift.
Dorothea looked at him blankly. Doesn't she remember? Clary thought, puzzled. The tarot deck, she said. The cards she painted for you. The witch's gaze went to the cards, lying in their silk wrappings on the table.
The cards?
As her gaze widened, Clary stepped to the table and picked up the deck. They were warm to the touch, almost slippery. Now, as she had not been able to before, she felt the power from the runes painted on their backs pulsing through the tips of her fingers. She found the Ace of Cups by touch and pulled it out, setting the rest of the cards back down on the table. Here it is, she said. They were all looking at her, expectant, perfectly still. Slowly, she turned the card over and looked again at her mother's artwork, the slim painted hand, its fingers wrapped around the gold stem of the mortal cup. Jace, she said, give me your steely. He pressed it, warm and alive feeling, into her palm. She turned the card over and traced over the runes painted on its back, a twist here and a line there, and they meant something entirely different. When she turned the card back over, the picture had subtly changed. The fingers had released their grip on the cup stem, and the hand seemed almost to be offering the cup to her as if to say, here, take it. She slid the steely into her pocket. Then, though the painted square was no bigger than her hand, she reached into it as if through a wide gap. Her hand wrapped around the base of the cup, her fingers closed on it, and as she drew her hand back, the cup gripped firmly in it, she thought she heard the smallest of sighs before the card, now blank and empty, turned to ash that sifted away between her fingers to the carpeted floor.
Chapter 19. Abaddon.
Clary wasn't sure what she'd expected. Exclamations of delight, perhaps a smattering of applause. Instead, there was silence, broken only when Jace said,
Somehow I thought it would be bigger.
Clary looked at the cup in her hand. It was the size, perhaps, of an ordinary wine glass, only much heavier. Power thrummed through it, like blood through living veins. It's a perfectly nice size, she said indignantly.
Oh, it's big enough, he said patronizingly.
But somehow I was expecting something, you know. He gestured with his hands, indicating something roughly the size of a house cat.
It's the mortal cup, Jace, not the mortal toilet bowl, said Isabel. Are we done now? Can we go?
Dorothea had her head cocked to one side, her beady eyes bright and interested.
But it's damaged, she exclaimed. How did that happen?
Damaged? Clary looked at the cup in bewilderment. It looked fine to her.
Here, said the witch, let me show you.
And she took a step toward Clary, holding her long red-nailed hands out for the cup. Clary, without knowing why, shrank back. Suddenly Jace was between them, his hand hovering near the sword at his waist.
No offense, he said calmly, but nobody touches the mortal cup except us.
Dorothea looked at him for a moment, and that same strange blankness returned to her eyes.
Now, she said, Let's not be hasty. Valentine would be displeased if anything were to happen to the cup.
With a soft snick, the sword at Jace's waist came free. The point hovered just below Dorothea's chin. Jace's look was steady.
I don't know what this is about, he said, but we're leaving.
The old woman's eyes gleamed.
Of course, Shadow Hunter, she said, backing up to the curtained wall. Would you like to use the portal?
The point of Jace's sword wavered as he stared in momentary confusion. Then Clary saw his jaw tighten.
Don't touch that!
Dorothea chuckled, and quick as a flash, she jerked down the curtains hanging along the wall. They fell with a sound of soft collapse. The portal behind them was open. Clary heard Alec, behind her, suck in his breath.
What is that?
Clary had caught only a glimpse of what was visible through the door. Red roiling clouds shot through with black lightning and a terrible dark rushing shape that hurtled toward them when Jace shouted for them to get down. He dropped to the floor, yanking Clary down with him. Flat on her stomach on the carpet, she lifted her head in time to see the rushing dark thing strike Madame Dorothea, who screamed, thrusting her arms upward. Rather than knocking her down, the dark thing wrapped her like a shroud, its blackness seeming to seep into her like ink sinking into paper. Her back humped monstrously, her whole shape elongating as she rose and rose into the air, her bulk stretching and reforming. A sharp rattle of objects striking the floor made Clary look down. They were Dorothea's bracelets, twisted and broken. Scattered among the jewels were what looked like small white stones. It took Clary a moment to realize that they were teeth. Beside her, Jace whispered something. It sounded like an exclamation of disbelief. Next to him, Alec, in a choked voice, said,
But you said there wasn't much demonic activity. You said the levels were low.
They were low, Jace growled.
Your version of low must be different from mine, Alec shouted,
as the thing that had once been Dorothea howled and twisted. It seemed to be spreading, humped and knobbled and grotesquely misshapen. Clary tore her eyes away as Jace stood, pulling her after him. Isabel and Alec stumbled to their feet, gripping their weapons. The hand holding Isabel's whip was trembling slightly.
Move!
Jace shoved Clary toward the apartment door. When she tried to look back over her shoulder, she saw only a thickly swirling grayness, like storm clouds, a dark shape at its center. The four of them burst out into the foyer, Isabel in the lead. She raced toward the front door, tried it, and turned with a stricken face.
It's resistant. Must be a spell.
Jace swore and fumbled in his jacket.
Where the hell is my steely?
I have it, Clary said, remembering. As she reached for her pocket, a noise like thunder exploded through the room. The floor heaved under her feet. She stumbled and nearly fell, catching at the banister for support. When she looked up, she saw a gaping new hole in the wall separating the foyer from Dorothea's apartment, lined all around its ragged edges with wood and plaster rubble, through which something was climbing, almost oozing.
Alec!
It was Jace, shouting. Alec was standing in front of the hole, white-faced and horrified-looking. Swearing, Jace ran up and grabbed him, dragging him back just as the oozing thing pulled itself free of the wall and into the foyer. Clary heard her breath catch. The creature's flesh was livid and bruised-looking. Through the seeping skin, bones protruded. Not new white bones, but bones that looked as if they had been in the earth 1,000 years, black and cracked and filthy. Its fingers were stripped and skeletal, its thin fleshed arms pocked with dripping black sores through which more yellowing bone was visible. Its face was a skull, its nose and eyes caved in holes, its taloned fingers brushed the floor. Tangled around its wrists and shoulders were bright swatches of cloth, all that remained of Madame Dorothea's silk scarves and turban. It was at least 9 feet tall. It looked down at the four teenagers with empty eye sockets.
Give me,
it said, in a voice like the wind blowing trash across empty pavement.
The mortal cup. Give it to me, and I will let you live.
Panicked, Clary stared at the others. Isabel looked as if the sight of the thing had hit her like a punch to the stomach. Alec was motionless. It was Jace, as always, who spoke.
What are you?
He asked, voice steady, though he looked more rattled than Clary had ever seen him. The thing inclined its head.
I am Abaddon. I am the demon of the abyss. Mine are the empty places between the worlds. Mine is the wind and howling darkness. I am as unlike those mewling things you call demons as an eagle is unlike a fly. You cannot hope to defeat me. Give me the cup or die.
Isabel's whip trembled.
It's a greater demon, she said. Jace, if we... What about Dorothea?
Clary's voice came shrilly out of her mouth before she could stop it.
What happened to her?
The demon's empty eyes swung to regard her.
She was a vessel only, it said. She opened the portal, and I took possession of her. Her death was swift.
Its gaze moved to the cup in her hand.
Yours will not be.
It began to move toward her. Jace blocked its way, the glittering sword in one hand, a seraph blade appearing in the other. Alec was watching him, his expression sick with horror.
By the angel, Jace said, looking the demon up and down. I knew greater demons were meant to be ugly, but no one ever warned me about the smell.
Abaddon opened its mouth and hissed. Inside its mouth were two rows of jagged, glass-sharp teeth.
I'm not so sure about this wind and howling darkness business, Jace went on. Smells more like landfill to me. You sure you're not from Staten Island?
The demon leaped at him. Jace whipped his blades up and outward with an almost frightening speed. Both sank into the fleshiest part of the demon, its abdomen. It howled and struck at him, knocking him aside the way a cat might bat aside a kitten. Jace rolled and got to his feet, but Clary could see from the way he was holding his arm that he'd been hurt. That was enough for Isabel. Darting forward, she lashed out at the demon with her whip. It struck the demon's gray hide, and a red wheel appeared, welling blood. Abaddon ignored her, moving toward Jace. With his uninjured hand, Jace drew out a second seraph blade. He whispered to it, and it sprung free, bright and gleaming. He raised it as the demon loomed up before him. He looked impossibly small in front of it, a child dwarfed by a monster. And he was grinning, even as the demon reached for him. Isabel, screaming, lashed at it, sending blood in a thick spray across the floor. The demon struck, its razored hand lashing down at Jace. Jace staggered back, but he was unharmed. Something had thrown itself between him and the demon, a slim black shadow with a gleaming blade in its hand. Alec. The demon shrieked. Alec's featherstaff had pierced its skin. With a snarl, it struck again, bone talons catching Alec, a vicious blow that lifted him off his feet and hurled him against the far wall. He struck with a sickening crunch and slid to the floor. Isabel screamed her brother's name. He didn't move. Lowering the whip, she started to run to him. The demon, turning, caught her a backhanded blow that sent her spinning to the ground. Coughing blood, Isabel started to get to her feet. Abaddon knocked her down again, and this time she lay still. The demon moved toward Clary. Jace stood frozen, staring at Alec's crumpled body like someone caught in a dream. Clary screamed as Abaddon neared her. She began to back up the stairs, stumbling on the broken steps. The steely burned against her skin. If only she had a weapon. Anything. Isabel had clawed her way into a sitting position. Pushing her bloody hair back, she screamed at Jace. Clary heard her own name in Isabel's screams and saw Jace, blinking as if slapped awake, spin toward her. He began to run. The demon was close enough now that Clary could see the black sores on its skin, could see that there were things crawling inside them. It reached for her. But Jace was there, knocking Abaddon's hand aside. He flung the seraph blade at the demon. It stuck in the creature's chest, next to the two blades already there. The demon snarled as if the blades were no more than an annoyance.
Shadow Hunter, it snarled. I shall take pleasure in killing you, in hearing your bones crunch as your friends did.
Springing onto the banister, Jace flung himself at Abaddon. The force of the jump knocked the demon backward. It staggered, Jace clinging to its back. He seized a seraph blade out of its chest, sending up a spray of ichor, and brought the blade down again and again into the demon's back, its shoulders running with black fluid. Snarling, Abaddon backed toward the wall. Jace had to drop or be crushed. He fell to the ground, landed lightly, and raised the blade again. But Abaddon was too swift for him. Its hand lashed out, knocking Jace into the stairs. Jace went down, a circle of talons at his throat.
Tell them to give me the cup, Abaddon snarled, talons hovering just above Jace's skin. Tell them to give it to me, and I will let them live.
Jace swallowed.
Clary, But Clary would never know what he would have said, because at that moment, the front door flew open. For a moment, all she saw was brightness. Then, blinking away the fiery afterimage, she saw Simon standing in the open doorway. Simon. She had forgotten he was outside, had almost forgotten he existed. He saw her, crouched on the stairs, and his gaze moved past her and over Abaddon and Jace. He reached back over his shoulder. He was holding Alec's bow, she realized, and the quiver was strapped across his back. He drew an arrow from it, fitted it to the string, and lifted the bow expertly, as if he'd done the same thing 100 times before. The arrow sprang free. It made a hot buzzing sound like a huge bumblebee as it shot over Abaddon's head, plunged toward the roof, and shattered the skylight. Dirty black glass fell like rain, and through the broken pane streamed sunlight, quantities of sunlight, great golden bars of it stabbing downward and flooding the foyer with light. Abaddon screamed and staggered back, shielding its misshapen head with its hands. Jace put a hand to his unharmed throat, staring in disbelief as the demon crumpled, howling, to the floor. Clary half expected it to burst into flames, but instead, it began to fold in on itself. Its legs collapsed toward its torso, its skull crumpling like burning paper, and within the span of a minute, it had vanished entirely, leaving only scorch marks behind. Simon lowered the bow. He was blinking behind his glasses, his mouth slightly open. He looked as astonished as Clary felt. Jace lay on the stairs where the demon had thrown him. He was struggling to sit up as Clary slid down the steps and fell to her knees beside him. Jace.
I'm all right.
He sat up, wiping blood from his mouth. He coughed and spit red.
Alec.
You're steely, she interrupted, reaching for her pocket. Do you need it to fix yourself? He looked at her. The sunlight pouring through the shattered skylight lit his face. He looked as if he were holding himself back from something with a terrible effort.
I'm all right, he said again,
and pushed her aside, none too gently. He got to his feet, staggered, and nearly fell, the first ungraceful thing she'd ever seen him do.
Alec?
Clary watched him as he limped across the foyer toward his unconscious friend. Then she zipped the mortal cup into the pocket of her hoodie and got to her feet. Isabel had crawled to her brother's side and was cradling his head in her lap, stroking his hair. His chest rose and fell, slowly, but he was breathing. Simon leaned against the wall watching them, looking utterly drained. Clary squeezed his hand as she passed him.
Thank you, she whispered. That was amazing.
Don't thank me, he said. Thank the archery program at B'nai B'reth summer camp.
Simon, I don't...
Clary!
It was Jace calling her.
Bring my steely.
Simon let her go reluctantly. She knelt down next to the shadow hunters, the mortal cup thumping heavily against her side. Alec's face was white, freckled with drops of blood, his eyes unnaturally blue. His grip on Jace's wrist left bloody smears.
Did I?
He started, then seemed to see Clary as if for the first time. There was something in his look she hadn't expected. Triumph.
Did I kill it?
Jace's face twisted painfully.
You...
Yes, Clary said. It's dead. Alec looked at her and laughed. Blood bubbled up in his mouth. Jace pulled his wrist free, touched his fingers to either side of Alec's face.
Don't, he said. Hold still. Just hold still.
Alec closed his eyes.
Do what you have to,
he whispered. Isabel held her steely out to Jace.
Take it.
He nodded and drew the tip of the steely down the front of Alec's shirt. The material parted as if he'd sliced it with a knife. Isabel watched him through frantic eyes as he yanked the shirt open, leaving Alec's chest bare. His skin was very white, marked here and there with old translucent scars. There were other injuries there too, a darkening lattice of claw marks, each hole red and oozing. Jaw set, Jace set the steely to Alec's skin, moving it back and forth with the ease of long practice. But there was something wrong. Even as he drew the healing marks, they seemed to vanish as if he were writing on water. Jace threw the steely aside.
Damn it.
Isabel's voice was shrill.
What's going on?
It cut him with its talons, Jace said. There's demon poison in him. The marks can't work.
He touched Alec's face again, gently.
Alec, he said, can you hear me?
Alec didn't move. The shadows under his eyes looked blue and dark as bruises. If it weren't for his breathing, Clary would have thought he was already dead. Isabel bent her head, her hair covering Alec's face. Her arms were around him.
Maybe, she whispered, we could...
Take him to the hospital.
It was Simon, standing over them, the bow dangling in his hand.
I'll help you carry him to the van. There's Methodist down on 7th Avenue.
No hospitals, said Isabel.
We need to get him to the Institute. But they won't know how to treat him in a hospital, said Jace. He's been cut by a greater demon. No mundane doctor would know how to heal those wounds.
Simon nodded.
All right, let's get him to the car.
In a stroke of good luck, the van hadn't been towed. Isabel draped a dirty blanket across the back seat and they laid Alec down across it, his head on Isabel's lap. Jace crouched down on the floor beside his friend. His shirt was stained dark across the sleeves and chest with blood, demon and human. When he looked at Simon, Clary saw that all the gold seemed washed out of his eyes by something she had never seen in them before. Panic.
Drive fast, Mundane, he said. Drive like hell was following you.
Simon drove. They careened down Flatbush and rocketed onto the bridge, keeping pace with the Q train as it roared over the blue water. The sun was painfully bright in Clary's eyes, striking hot sparks off the river. She clutched at her seat as Simon took the curving ramp off the bridge at 50 miles an hour. She thought about the awful things she'd said to Alec, the way he'd thrown himself at Abaddon, the look of triumph on his face. When she turned her head now, she saw Jace kneeling next to his friend as blood seeped through the blanket. She thought of the little boy with the dead falcon. To love is to destroy. Clary turned back around, a hard lump lodged in the back of her throat. Isabel was visible in the badly angled rearview mirror, wrapping the blanket around Alec's throat. She looked up and met Clary's eyes.
How much farther?
Maybe 10 minutes. Simon's driving as fast as he can.
I know,
Isabel said.
Simon, what you did, that was incredible. You moved so fast. I wouldn't have thought a mundane could have thought of something like that.
Simon didn't seem fazed by praise from such an unexpected quarter. His eyes were on the road.
You mean shooting out the skylight? It hit me after you guys went inside. I was thinking about the skylight and how you'd said demons couldn't stand direct sun. So, actually, it took me a while to act on it. Don't feel bad, he added. You can't even see that skylight unless you know it's there.
I knew it was there, Clary thought. I should have acted on it. Even if I didn't have a bow and arrow like Simon, I could have thrown something at it or told Jace about it. She felt stupid and useless and thick, as though her head were full of cotton. The truth was that she'd been frightened, too frightened to think straight. She felt a bright surge of shame that burst behind her eyelids like a small sun. Jace spoke then.
It was well done, he said.
Simon's eyes narrowed.
So, if you don't mind telling me, that thing, that demon, where did it come from?
It was Madame Dorothea, said Clary. I mean, it was sort of her.
She was never exactly a pinup, but I don't remember her looking that bad.
I think she was possessed, said Clary slowly, trying to piece it together in her own mind. She wanted me to give her the cup, then she opened the portal.
It was clever, said Jace. The demon possessed her, then hid the majority of its ethereal form just outside the portal, where the sensor wouldn't register it. So we went in expecting to fight a few Forsaken. Instead, we found ourselves facing a greater demon, Abaddon, one of the Ancients, the Lord of the Fallen. Well, it looks like the Fallen will just have to learn to get along without him from now on, said Simon, turning onto the street.
He's not dead, Isabel said. Hardly anyone's ever killed a greater demon. You have to kill them in their physical and ethereal forms before they'll die. We just scared him off.
Oh, Simon looked disappointed. What about Madame Dorothea? Will she be all right now that...
He broke off because Alec had begun to choke, his breath rattling in his chest. Jace swore under his breath with vicious precision.
Why aren't we there yet?
We are here. I just don't want to crash into a wall.
As Simon pulled up carefully at the corner, Clary saw that the door of the Institute was open, Hodge standing framed in the arch. The van jerked to a halt and Jace leaped out, reaching back to lift Alec as if he weighed no more than a child. Isabel followed him up the walk, holding her brother's bloody feather staff. The institute door slammed shut behind them. Tiredness washing over her, Clary looked at Simon.
I'm sorry. I don't know how you're going to explain all the blood to Eric.
Screw Eric, he said with conviction. Are you all right?
Not a scratch. Everyone else got hurt, but not me.
It's their job, Clary, he said gently. Fighting demons, it's what they do, not what you do.
What do I do, Simon? She asked, searching his face for an answer. What do I do?
Well, you got the cup, he said, didn't you?
She nodded and tapped her pocket. Yes. He looked relieved.
I almost didn't want to ask, he said.
That's good, right? It is, she said. She thought of her mother, and her hand tightened on the cup. I know it is.
Church met her at the top of the stairs, yowling like a foghorn, and led her to the infirmary. The double doors were open, and through them she could see Alec's still figure, motionless on one of the white beds. Hodge was bent over him. Isabel, beside the older man, held a silver tray in her hands. Jace was not with them. He was not with them because he was standing outside the infirmary, leaning against the wall, his bare, bloody hands curled at his sides. When Clary stopped in front of him, his lids flew open, and she saw that the pupils of his eyes were dilated, all the gold swallowed up in black.
How is he? She asked, as gently as she could.
He's lost a lot of blood. Demon poisonings are common, but since it was a greater demon, Hodge isn't sure if the antidotes he usually employs will be viable.
She reached to touch his arm. Jace. He flinched away.
Don't.
She sucked in her breath. I never would have wanted anything to happen to Alec. I'm so sorry.
He looked at her as if seeing her there for the first time.
It's not your fault, he said. It's mine.
Yours? Jace, no, it isn't.
Oh, but it is,
he said, his voice as fragile as a sliver of ice.
Mea culpa. Mea maxima culpa.
What does that mean?
My fault, he said. My own fault. My most grievous fault. It's Latin.
He brushed a lock of her hair back from her forehead absently, as if unaware he was doing it.
Part of the Mass.
I thought you didn't believe in religion.
I may not believe in sin, he said, but I do feel guilt. We shadow hunters live by a code, and that code isn't flexible. Honor, fault, penance, those are real to us, and they have nothing to do with religion and everything to do with who we are. This is who I am, Clary, he said desperately. I am one of the Clave. It's in my blood and bones. So tell me, if you're so sure this wasn't my fault, why is it that the first thought in my mind when I saw Abaddon wasn't for my fellow warriors, but for you?
His other hand came up. He was holding her face, prisoned between his palms.
I know, I knew Alec wasn't acting like himself. I knew something was wrong, but all I could think about was you.
He bent his head forward so their foreheads touched. She could feel his breath stir her eyelashes. She closed her eyes, letting the nearness of him wash over her like a tide.
If he dies, it will be like I killed him, he said. I let my father die, and now I've killed the only brother I ever had.
That's not true, she whispered.
Yes,
it is.
They were close enough to kiss, and still he held her tightly, as if nothing could reassure him that she was real.
Clary, he said, what's happening to me?
She searched her mind for an answer and heard someone clear his throat. She opened her eyes. Hodge stood by the infirmary door, his neat suit stained with patches of rust.
I have done what I can. He is sedated, not in pain, but...
He shook his head.
I must contact the Silent Brothers. This is beyond my abilities.
Jace drew slowly away from Clary.
How long will it take them to get here? I don't know.
Hodge started down the corridor, shaking his head.
I'll send Hugo immediately, but the brothers come at their own discretion. But for this,
Even Jace was scrambling to keep up with Hodge's long strides. Clary had fallen hopelessly behind the two of them and had to strain her ears to hear what he was saying.
He might die otherwise. He might,
was all Hodge said in response. The library was dark and smelled like rain. One of the windows had been left open, and a puddle of water had collected under the curtains. Hugo chirruped and bounced on his perch as Hodge strode over to him, pausing only to light the lamp on his desk.
It is a pity,
Hodge said, reaching for paper and a fountain pen,
that you did not retrieve the cup. It would, I think, bring some comfort to Alec, and certainly to his—
But I did retrieve the cup, said Clary, amazed. Didn't you tell him, Jace?
Jace was blinking, though whether it was because of surprise or the sudden light, Clary couldn't tell.
There wasn't time. I was bringing Alec upstairs.
Hodge had gone very still, the pen motionless between his fingers.
You have the cup?
Yes. Clary drew the cup out of her pocket. It was still cold, as if contact with her body could not warm the metal. The rubies winked like red eyes.
I have it here.
The pen slipped from Hodge's hand entirely and struck the floor at his feet. The lamplight, thrown upward, was not kind to his ravaged face. It showed every etched line of harshness and worry and despair.
That is the angel's cup?
The one, said Jace. It was—
Never mind that now, said Hodge.
He set the paper down on the desk and moved toward Jace, catching his student by the shoulders.
Jace Wayland, do you know what you've done?
Jace looked up at Hodge, surprised. Clary noted the contrast, the ravaged face of the older man and the boy's unlined one, the pale locks of hair falling into Jace's eyes, making him look even younger.
I'm not sure what you mean, Jace said.
Hodge's breath hissed out through his teeth.
You look so much like him.
Like who?
Said Jace in astonishment. He had clearly never heard Hodge talk this way before.
Like your father,
Hodge said, and raised his eyes to where Hugo, black wings stirring the humid air, hovered just overhead. Hodge narrowed his eyes.
Hugin,
he said, and with an unearthly caw, the bird dived straight for Clary's face, claws outstretched. Clary heard Jace shout, and then the world was whirling feathers and slashing beak and claws. Bright pain bloomed along her cheek, and she shrieked, instinctively throwing her hands up to cover her face. She felt the mortal cup yanked from her grasp.
No! She cried, grabbing for it.
An agonizing pain shot up her arm. Her legs seemed to go out from under her. She slipped and fell, striking her knees painfully against the hard floor. Claws raked her forehead.
That's enough, Hugo, said Hodge in his quiet voice.
Obediently, the bird spun away from Clary. Gagging, she blinked blood out of her eyes. Her face felt shredded. Hodge had not moved. He stood where he was, holding the mortal cup. Hugo was circling him in wide, agitated rounds, cawing softly. And Jace. Jace lay on the floor at Hodge's feet, very still, as if he had fallen suddenly asleep. All other thoughts were driven from her mind.
Jace!
Speaking hurt, the pain in her cheek was startling and she could taste blood in her mouth. Jace didn't move.
He's not hurt, said Hodge.
Clary started to her feet, meaning to fling herself at him, then reeled back as she struck something invisible, but as hard and strong as glass. Infuriated, she struck against the air with her fist.
Hodge! She shouted.
She kicked out, nearly bruising her feet on the same invisible wall.
Don't be stupid. When the Clave finds out what you've done—
I'll be long gone by then,
he said, kneeling over Jace.
But—
A shock ran through her, a jolt of electric realization.
You never sent a message to the Clave, did you? That's why you were so weird when I asked you about it. You wanted the cup for yourself.
Not, said Hodge, for myself.
Clary's throat was dry as dust.
You work for Valentine,
she whispered.
I do not work for Valentine, said Hodge.
He lifted Jace's hand and drew something from it. It was the engraved ring Jace always wore. Hodge slipped it onto his own finger.
But I am Valentine's man, it is true.
With a swift movement, he twisted the ring three times around his finger. For a moment, nothing happened.
Then Clary heard the sound of a door opening and turned instinctively to see who was coming into the library. When she turned back, she saw that the air beside